morning and welcome to ASI's Tuesday Morning Show, where ASI's most outspoken editors talk promo products. I'm Melinda Lagos, editor-in-chief of ASI's magazines, and we have a star-studded show for you today. We actually have stars on the phone.
Stars.
Me too.
Real stars.
We have stars.
Now, besides the stars in this room, of course, you could have been bigger stars if you had taken my suggestion this morning, which Kathy really liked, which was we could do the whole show like a Glee show.
Oh, yeah.
But everybody on this side of the room.
That's when
that.
You'll be doing the show without me.
That's why you're called
Captain Killjoy.
Perfect. I will be the Sue Sylvester role.
You'd be perfect.
You would be great
I
in
know,
that.
Glee.
We've
I know
got
24 though.
We've got a star-studded lineup. We've
night?
Got Oof. Greg and Vera Mazzillo, our new people of the year, on the phone. We've got Tom Cissi, our keynote in Chicago, who's ready to talk. But Michelle, why don't you give us the full lineup?
Well, as you said, we have Greg and Vera Mazzillo, who are this year's Counselor People of the Year, and we're going to talk to them about the secrets to their success. We have Tom Cissi, who's the ASI keynoter in Chicago this
Very
year.
Very exciting.
And he's a sales guru and expert. Next week, Kathy's going to tell us about the top paying jobs for women. Nicole's going to regale us with hot stats from her Stitches State of the Industry report.
Regale.
Wow. Regale. Andy is going to give us a tutorial on how to do a quick market analysis, and he's going to tie that in with a new counselor feature that he's working on. I'm going to talk about the three ways the roles of suppliers in the industry are changing, and if we have time, Nicole will talk about whether or not you have email rage.
Can't wait for that one.
Speaking of rage, we're not going to have a rant from Joe Haley this morning because Joe is off in Ireland.
Joe is
oh
in
my
Ireland.
God.
He's probably not ranting. He's probably
but yet
nice
still
time.
With us, sort of.
But first we have Andy with the news.
Go, Andy.
All right. Thanks, Michelle. The industry has officially begun its rebound as distributors posted an 11.1% revenue increase in the first quarter of 2010. The total represents a gain of $351 million in distributor revenues over last year's Q1. The increase marks a turnaround from 2009's Q4 decline of 9.7% and a year that saw the industry as a whole drop 19.5%. Two pieces of unfortunate news this morning. Two past winners of Counselor's Person of the Year Award passed away last week. Industry consultant Glenn Holt, who had been a Geiger board member and helped found Certified Marketing Consultants, lost his battle with cancer on Friday. And Don Harley, founder of Designer Selections and the Person of the Year in 1991, passed away on Thursday. Counselor Top 40 distributor Inner Workings reported a revenue increase of 19% in the first quarter of 2010. The company's stock price is up more than 10% since the announcement. Plus, in Promogram later today, make sure to check out our video recap of last week's ASI show in New York City.
Thank you very much, Andy.
You bet.
Some good economic news and good news for the industry.
It's all turning around now.
You can read more about that in today's Promogram. And speaking of good news, we have Greg Mazzillo on the phone. He's on line 6. Greg, congratulations on you and Vera winning Counselor Magazine's Person of the Year Award.
Well, thank you very much.
That's very exciting, and we're excited to have you on the show today. Now, Greg, last year was challenging for everybody. What do you think helped perform and get through the year and actually have a lot of good bright spots?
Yeah. Well, we're a network of distributor members, so what helped us get through the year was probably a couple of key things. Number one, our distributor members also sell printing, and that was not hit as significantly as promotional products. Number two, we offer free credit insurance. So in the last 18 months, our members collected over almost $2 million worth of credit insurance, and I can think of three or four of our member distributors that would have gone out of business without the credit insurance. And then finally, some big businesses were open, were still way open for business, but looking for better value. And our company store team actually grew significantly, almost 35%. Last year we won fully almost 90% of the proposals we helped our members make for company store programs.
Greg, that's great. This is Michelle. Congratulations.
Thank you, Michelle.
I have a question about what do you think, and I know Vera's actually not on the phone with you, but what would you say are some tips that you could give people in the industry as far as what you consider or what you would attribute your success in the industry overall, as far as the duration and the length of time that you guys have been in the industry and the success that you've enjoyed? What would you point to as reasons for that?
I think we're driven to be successful and get beyond being comfortable. And I think most distributors in our industry sort of get stuck at comfortable. And there's only three phases of building a business. First is fear of failure. There's people listening right now that probably have credit card debt trying to get their company going and growing. But most people eventually get to comfortable, where they're going to be able to say, hey, honey, we're going to be able to keep the house, keep the cars in the driveway, keep sending the kids to the same school. But that's just comfortable, and it's not getting wealthy. Wealthy is the third level of the three levels of owning a business. But most people get stuck at comfortable because they can, because they're independent distributors with the emphasis on independent. They report to no one, they work with no one, and they're on their own and all alone, and they're just stuck at comfortable without a passion for creating wealth or a plan for creating wealth. And so I just think that at Proforma we're fortunate that Vera and I kind of have each other to continue to keep driving ourselves, and our franchise members all have each other to help keep driving them.
Great, thank you.
So, Greg, you guys were honored at a big gala event in New York City last Wednesday. What would you say was your favorite moment of that event?
You know, the favorite moment of that event was having both the president of our Franchise Advisory Council there, because in all fairness, as I said on at the awards, there's no such thing as a person of the year. There's only people of the year. We were there to represent all of the people who are Proforma, the 730-some members, who was represented by the president of our Franchise Advisory Council, and then the 130 people in our support center that make it happen every day for our members, and our president and chief operating officer was there to share. So the highlight of that night for me was truly being able to share this award with all of the nearly 1,000 people who really have made it happen.
And speaking of people, you had at least, I think, half of your very large brood there. Is that right?
Well, Vera and I together have 10 kids, and one of them's married, so that makes 11, including my son-in-law. So wow. And we had almost half of them there.
Well, that's pretty exciting. Well, congratulations again, and there's a great story about you and Vera in this month's Counselor. So,
well, thank you. We're very honored.
All right. Have
Thanks,
a great
Greg.
Day, Greg.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, Greg talked a little about sales, and here to give some more fantastic sales tips is Tom Searcy. He's going to be our keynote speaker in Chicago on July 15th. Tom is the CEO and founder of Hunt Big Sales, and he, in the keynote, is going to talk about how distributors can close their biggest deal ever. We're talking about six and even eight-figure deals, so that's going to be real exciting. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
How are you? Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me. I was listening to part of the program, and you guys are covering some great stuff this morning.
Oh, good. Well, I think you're going to give us some more. Kathy's got some questions for you.
Hi, Tom.
Super.
How
hey,
are you?
Kathy.
My first question is, what are some of the bad behaviors you see or bad habits that keep salespeople from getting big sales?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There's quite a few of them, to be honest, but the ones I see the most often, and you find this in people that are new to the business or new to the industry and selling. And the first thing they do is they hunt everything. They really are kind of, instead of hunting out in the marketplace, they're dragging the net, so to speak, through the ocean, trying to get whatever they can. And so they go to every tips group and every function that's out there, hoping to garner new leads and new opportunities. But it soaks up all of your time running around everywhere. So one of the things is that they don't pick their real targets, their real opportunities that are those 5-, 6-, 7-figure kinds of opportunities. Instead, they waste their time on talking to everybody. You got to be careful. And your big folks, like the folks you were talking to, Greg and Vera, are the kinds of folks that probably have a strong hunting strategy as well. Second thing is the pitch and wait. That, you know, that's where they make their pitch and a customer says, well, we'll get back to you. And then they put themselves in a position of kind of chasing that prospect by phone and email. It winds up to the prospect. It feels kind of like, you know, the summer where you've got a mosquito when you're out in the humidity just buzzing around. It becomes very annoying. But that's that pitch and wait strategy. And I think the third thing is that one of the mistakes that folks make is that they believe that if I just get one buyer, that I can get a really big deal inside of a big company. But big companies don't buy like that. They wind up having more people at the buyer's table. They wind up bringing in people like procurement or someone from marketing, even though it's a human resources kind of a purchase or an employee loyalty or a market branding kind of an activity. They bring more people into the conversation. So folks just try to keep it to one buyer, and in the very end, someone else who has more supporters inside of your prospect winds up winning the deal even though you worked really hard for it.
Hi, Tom. This is Nicole. So you talked about some of the bad behaviors that keep people from getting big sales. What are some of the ways that people can find the right sales opportunities, especially within their existing client bases?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think that when you're working with your current customers and you're really trying to figure out how do we do a better job of getting that relationship going, I encourage people to follow a nine-box rule. And a nine-box rule says, take whoever your contact is or your buyer is inside of your current customer and put them in the center of nine boxes and then say, who are their peers? Who, you know, their two peers? Who are their three subordinates underneath them? And who are the three people that are above them? And when you look at that nine box, the question is, how do I follow the money inside of each of those boxes that's touching my number one buyer's box inside of those big companies? And then by doing that, I have a way of developing a new relationship, but I also have a little roadmap of really trying to see who, how do I get a referral from one person inside of that company to the next. The second thing is that, you know, I think lots of times we are committed to what I call the iron triangle of quality, service, and price. And for buying, you know, small quantities or even mid-sized quantities of the kinds of products that we offer, that works. But if you want to get bigger deals inside of your bigger customers, you have to actually solve business problems. When those business problems have the language of time, money, and risk. I was talking recently to somebody in the industry, and I said, listen, if you sell 1,000 T-shirts, you know, the logo wear T-shirts, you are a shirt printer. If you sell 10,000 shirts, you are a price point provider. If you sell 100,000 shirts to that same company, you are solving very different kinds of business problems, right? You're solving logistics and returns, and you're also solving supply chain management, endpoint packaging, and the list goes on and on. And so as you move towards that 100,000 units, and I don't care what the item is, what the promotional item is, when you move to those bigger number of units, you're not solving service quality and price problems. You're solving business problems. And that's the language that you have to land those very, very big deals.
Good points, Tom. Tom, this is Melinda. And I know that, you know, your company's called Hump Big Sales, and you really specialize in going after the big, big deals. A lot of distributors in our industry are smaller players, and some of them could be intimidated by going after really large, you know, let's say Fortune 500 clients. So what tips can you offer about how large companies buy that can help them be better informed?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, is, you know, your biggest deal ever is whatever your biggest deal is. I mean, my daughter is 7 years old, and she wound up winning the cookie sale a program at her school, right? And for her at seven, her biggest deal ever was $563, right? So my point being is whatever size, and by the way, I am now a very heavy, large cookie consumer. You might be able to identify who her largest customer was. But my point is that for any one of your distributors, we advocate a trigger map strategy that says, okay, look at last year, look at 2009. What was the biggest deal that you landed in 2009? Now, let's make a decision to land a deal that is at least 25% bigger than last year. So instead of trying to land a deal with Coca-Cola or ExxonMobil or whatever, let's just look at our business and every year challenge ourselves to land our biggest deal ever compared to last year. As you move up, your confidence increases, and yet it's not that much bigger than any deal you've ever done, right? It's only 25% bigger. So we really encourage people to build a mapping strategy that in a very short period of time, if you think about the numbers that I'm talking about, in less than 3 to 4 years, you will have doubled the size of your biggest deal ever, which will increase your confidence, it will develop new strategies, and you'll meet new companies and new people to give you even better referrals.
Hi, Tom. This is Andy. I know in a previous conversation that I had with you, you had mentioned some favorite promotional products that you have for your business, in different ways that you promote your business in a specific sort of line of products. Maybe you can Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, if we're talking about the promotional items, I had talked about the idea that if you right size to the person, so for example, my deals are big deals, you know, they're that I'm landing, and so when I'm talking to a customer, I might send them an iTouch or an iPad that's been customized to their business, a very expensive part on my side, but relatively inexpensive, and my willingness to go ahead and invest in that is related to the business problem, right? I'm trying to land very large revenue for my company, and I'm only talking to a very small number of companies. And so those kinds of pieces give me, they get the attention. Because what's my problem? My problem is I want somebody to open up my item, to be excited about what they see, to remember me when I call, and to take my phone call. So price becomes almost no object to me at that particular point.
Oh, yeah, this is Rich Fairfield. I had a question that I wanted to ask you just related to something you had mentioned before. When you have your nine box of the people above and below,
yes.
How do you get some of our members might be feel that they've got a good thing going with their client and they may not want to go, you know, two steps or one step above that person? How do you help them to break that fear?
Well, I think, you know, it's a very good question. I think there's two things. First is when we talk, maybe we don't even need to talk to that person above. What we need to do is to understand that person above. So, for example, maybe our greatest advocate inside of our client is very fearful about us talking to the person who's their boss or
exactly.
Someone who's next to their boss. But our job is to not sell promotional items. Our job is to help our client to solve business problems. And so the nature of our question is not so much, hey, Mr. Prospect, what's your business problem? But really to ask, what are the business problems that your boss is charging you to solve right now? And talk and understand about their business problem. No one buys promotional items, or very few people buy promotional items just because they want a promotional item. They buy them because they want to increase sales, and so they want a sales promotion. They want to increase brand awareness, so they want to circulate items out in the marketplace to get their name and image and logo out in the marketplace. They want to increase customer loyalty, or they want to increase employee loyalty, or they need to provide some sort of an identification about an event or about their business that makes people remember that event or business, say an expo or a national conference or whatever. Those are all business problems. And yet when they come to us, they say, hey, what kinds of new promotional items do you have that would be really cool for the conference? Our next question's got to be, wait a minute, what is it you're trying to get done at that conference, and how is your boss going to measure the success for you at that conference? And if they say, well, my boss just wants to see, you know, our stuff in everybody's hand everywhere at the conference, then your answer is, okay, then the issue of what the price is of the item is not nearly as important as understanding what is the kind of item that will be carried everywhere, and how do we get your boss to recognize that you fixed that problem for him or for her. And these are the kinds of questions where we move from being order takers to really being salespeople who are solving problems, and that's what gets to the big sales. It's when we move from being a vendor who provides those kinds of pieces into a partner who provides those kinds of solutions.
Well, great tips this morning from Tom Searcy, CEO and founder of Hunt Big Sales. Tom, thank you so much for speaking with us today. I know that people will be excited to hear your keynote on July 15th at 8 a.m., and you're going to be there even signing books afterwards. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I can't wait. It's going to be a lot of fun.
All right. Well, check out Tom Searcy at ASI Chicago. Thursday, July 25th, go to asishow.com for more information. And thanks again, Tom.
You bet. Have a great morning.
You too. We are going to pause for a commercial from today's show sponsor, I Promote You. And when we return, Kathy is going to tell us the top paying jobs for women. Ooh, I want to know.
This portion of ASI Radio is sponsored by I Promote You. Distributors and salespeople, consider affiliating with I Promote You today. Be more productive, be more profitable, be happier, and retain your independence. I Promote You, the smart choice. For more information, call 1-800-850-3370 or go to www.ipromoteyou.com.
We're back with ASI's Tuesday Morning Show, and we are happy to take other calls today. We've heard from Greg Mazzillo, and we've heard from Tom Searcy. If you have any comments on what they've had to say or any sales tips or questions yourself, please call us, 215-953-4979. There's still a little time to call in. Of course, if we put you on there, we'll give you a $25 Visa gift card. Again, that's 215-953-4979. And now, Kathy, what are the top paying jobs for women? Wait, let's all guess. Rich, what do you think?
Number one. What's number one?
Investment banker.
Boo. Michelle. Editor of Advantages Magazine.
I guess like a CEO, right? Something in general.
That's
like
one.
That?
Yeah.
Is it?
Okay. Yes. How about you, Andy?
Lawyer.
That's up there.
Surgeon.
Up there.
I was going to say doctor.
Okay. Here's a top five, but I'm going to talk about a couple other ones as well. Pharmacists is number one. Chief executives. Mm-hmm. Lawyers, Andy, computer software engineers, and computer and information systems managers. Those are the top five according to the Bureau.
Journalist wasn't in there?
Journalist is nowhere to be found.
That's a big surprise.
Nowhere to be found, but the good news for this industry is marketing and sales managers came in at number 16.
Oh, I was going to say a marketing executive.
And advertising and promotions managers came in at number 24.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Unfortunately, the bad news is that women working full-time make 80% of what men earn in the same positions.
Oh, come on. Isn't that gap closing?
Still these days.
Wow.
What do you think about that?
I don't like that.
I don't like that either.
All right. Nicole, Stitches just came out with its State of the Industry issue.
Yep.
And I know that you've found some interesting facts about the embroidery industry.
I always think anything about the embroidery industry is fascinating.
So what do you have for us?
Well, the good news is, I mean, this seems to be kind of a continuing trend. About 63% of decorators think that 2010 is going to be better. They're very optimistic. They're still investing in their businesses. 52% experienced either flat sales or an increase from 2008 to 2009. So, I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's good.
Considering.
Absolutely.
They're continuing to serve very diverse markets. And in this marketplace, no single industry takes up more than 15% of the total. So the top four industries that they're serving are local athletic teams, educational institutions, associations, and clubs, and manufacturing, surprisingly. And the other good news is that 93% of them are increasing their marketing budgets for 2010. But they're also looking to cheaper alternatives like social networking. And Facebook is the number one social networking tool that decorators use, although more are saying that they're going to get on Twitter in 2010 into 2011.
So overall, decorators are feeling bullish.
I would say so.
That's great. Where can people get more information?
They can go to Stitches.com. The report will be online soon, and or they can look in Stitches Magazine May issue.
Thank you very much, Nicole. We have a caller on line one. Michael wanted to weigh in on Tom Searcy's comments. Good morning, Michael.
Hey, good morning.
Michael, what do you have to say to us today?
I loved his comments about how, you know, when you're selling to a large company to find out what the, you know, the person that you're selling to, what their boss is interested in and what's going to make them look the best and so forth. And he's probably not on the phone anymore, but I was wondering, is that when you also can bring in some value selling to where, you know, you're not only finding out what their boss is interested in and what their boss is looking for, but, you know, how you can provide, you know, with the tight budgets lately, how you can provide the best value and still get what you're trying to accomplish for that person across, but, you know, again, sell it as value to where you can maybe get them to spend more if you show a good ROI on what you're trying to do. Am I making sense?
Yeah, I think the higher you go on the sort of food chain, so to speak, at any company, the more you need to talk value and ROI. And, you know, that would be part of your sell, you know.
But also concept. I mean, I think that
for
the
sure.
key is that it's a concept sell and that value is implied. I think part of his thing is that everyone is coming to the table with good pricing. And so unless you have, you know, absolutely the best pricing in the world, it's not necessarily that. It's providing a solution.
Right. I didn't even mean the low price value. Yeah. I mean the value that you're providing to the organization.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the types of return that that your program or your, you know, creative idea can provide to that organization. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Yeah, because I think we're all kind of getting tired of selling just on price. So I was hoping to be able to sell some value to those people and be able to, you know, maintain a good price point.
Right. All right. Well, thanks for calling in, Mike. Michael, stay on the line for your $25 Visa gift card. And also, in the June issue of Counselor Magazine, we'll have more detailed interview with Tom Searcy. So
we
check
it
out. All righty. So, Andy, top
yes.
cities for promotional product sales.
Yes.
I know counselors hard at work in identifying the top 25.
Mm-hmm.
But how can distributors kind of do their own market analysis and, you know, see what areas are profitable for them?
Yeah, in our June issue, we have a big feature on the top 25 markets to do business in. And within that, we also offer a story that looks at how distributors can gauge their own local opportunities. So here's a couple of tips that come from that feature article. First is to evaluate your own capabilities. You know, can you fulfill large accounts, and what's your niche and how that fits in with your local market? You have to match those up. Second and third is really some things that you should look at to determine who the best targets are. So who's advertising? You know, take a look at your local market and find out who's advertising, who's marketing their businesses, and target those that are really marketing and are you know, going out there and spending money. Also, go to local trade shows. You'll see there who's, you know, really pushing their wares. So that'll give you an idea. Also, take a look at who's hiring. You know, those are the companies that are growing.
Yeah.
You want to target your efforts to growers right now. And there are a lot. There are a lot that are beginning to, you know, ramp up their hiring programs. So that's something to certainly look at. And as far as your local market is concerned, you can look at business relocations and the amount of companies that have opened up in your local market. So check the local Chamber of Commerce databases, and those are all pretty public, and you can find out the companies that have moved into the area and also the amount of new companies that have opened up in the area.
All right, well, be sure to check out Counselor's June issue to find out the top 25 cities for selling. I wonder if Trevose, Pennsylvania is in there. I guess we'll just have to wait
to find
out.
You'll have to wait to see.
On line two, we have Danielle. She has some comments this morning. Good morning, Danielle.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. I had a question. Greg was talking about how Proforma has 700-something distributors, and they've got a wonderful support staff of 130-plus. Now, my question relates to that. For smaller distributors who want to become larger, you know, we're working with a very small staff. How do you have tips on when to bite the bullet? How you determine, hey, we need to add another person for support or selling, and how you go about doing that?
I think we've written a lot about this in the magazines. I mean, one determination, I think, measure we've used a lot is if you're taking your time away from selling to do other administrative tasks. I mean, that's a real no-no. And if you find yourself doing that, you obviously need help. Andy, you might have others.
Well, my suggestion would be it's twofold. You certainly have to have enough revenue and cash on hand to take on any fixed costs that you're adding. So if you're going to add a person or move into a new office or really take on any kind of weekly and monthly cost, you know, you ought to have a good 6 months of cash on hand to make sure that you can cover that in case your revenues, you know, can't match it. Secondly, I would say that, you know, before you add on any salespeople, I would look at support. Like Melinda said, you know, you or the people who are, you know, the heads of your company are probably the best sellers, and you want to make sure that you have as much selling time and face time with clients as possible. So you would want to try to, I would first say, add some support staff or a support staffer.
Or even a system that helps you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Takes
right,
out some
for
of the
sure.
manual work.
You know, anything, yeah, any sort of system or technology that can take out some of that manual work to give you more face time with clients.
We always advocate interns, too.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
some are interns mm-hmm. who, you know, can come at a good price, and they also get valuable experience.
And also another less expensive alternative would be hiring somebody maybe retired who just wants to work part-time. They'd be a good support person.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good luck, Danielle, and stay on the line
Thank
for
you
your
much.
Visa gift card. Michelle, there's the roles of suppliers in the industry are changing.
They
Give
are.
Us some examples.
They are. Well, we have an article in the May-June issue of SGR, which is for suppliers. The one main thing that really came through in the article is there's a move among suppliers, a move towards being full-service resources for distributors. They now have to be safety experts, marketing consultants, and financial aides through extending credit. So they're really kind of doing it all, taking on a much bigger role in assisting distributors. Also, there's a move towards being more collaborative with their distributors, where they're going to share things like infrastructure, financial risk, creative product development, and marketing programs as end buyers get more ambitious and creative.
Wow, and you can read all about it. Suppliers can check it out in the May issue of Supplier Global Resource.
They can indeed.
Andy, you're going to bring up the rear today and tell us when...
I am going to bring up the rear.
When texting isn't okay. Now, Michelle, you should listen to this because Michelle's a big texter.
Well, I'm gonna leave the audience with one nugget of information, which I find extremely interesting. A new survey came out that says if you're younger than 25... 10% of you. Anybody younger than 25 in here? Steve, you're
nobody
close.
Nobody in here.
You're awfully close. If you're younger than 25, 10% of you would be okay with texting during sex.
Is that sexting?
That's not even C4. No. Sexting is to get to the act.
And
this
is
during
how we're
the act.
Bringing up the rear today?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think it's amazing.
All right. Well,
I've never done that.
We would all agree.
Well, thank
I
you
think
for
we would all
full
agree
disclosure.
That that's a real no no. Thank you very much. I wish Joe was back for his rant. Thanks for listening today. Thanks to today's show sponsor, I Promote You. And please check in with us next Tuesday, same time, same place. Have a great day.